and Branded 307. Get your tickets online at wildjam.com.
The following message is presented by Century21BHJ.com.
This is Paul Juergens, the Wyoming State Director of the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. Occupational cancer is today's greatest threat to firefighters' health and responsible for 3/4 of firefighters' death per year. On June 25th, a fundraiser is planned at Black Tooth Brewery. In addition to Pint Night, there will be a 50-50 raffle. Money raised will be used to support cancer research, provide firefighters education on occupational cancer, and support firefighters who have received a cancer diagnosis. Come down and show support. Hope to see you there.
Are you ready to elevate your event in Sheridan and the surrounding area? Welcome to WyoTix.com, a partnership of Sheridan Media and the Sheridan Press. WyoTix.com isn't just an online ticket sales platform. It's your partner in bringing your event to life. We'll offer a seamless ticketing experience for every occasion. Festivals, concerts, community events. If you have an event that needs ticketing, WyoTix.com will connect you with attendees. Our commitment is to make your event ticketing a success. And with WyoTix.com, you can harness the power of both our platforms to make your event shine. Whether you're a business or an event organizer, let us be your guide in navigating the event ticketing landscape. Unlock the potential of your next event with WyoTix.com. Visit WyoTix.com and let's make ticketing your next event a huge success. WyoTix.com, a partnership of Sheridan Media and the Sheridan Press.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Wednesday, June 25th. And from Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, I am joined by University of Wyoming Director of Institutional Communications, Mr. Chad Baldwin. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning, Floyd.
How are you guys doing down there in Laramie this June?
That's beautiful, Floyd. This is the time of year that Laradice was invented, that term. It's beautiful.
It is a really pretty town. I always really enjoyed walking underneath all those large trees down there. Right down 9th Street is where I used to live, directly down the street from the university. And it's always nice to walk down around there. I recently attended my niece's graduation from Laramie High School, and it really gave me and my family a chance to kind of drive around the university a bit. I got to see the new parking garage. I hadn't seen that yet. It's big and beautiful, and I also got to see the new dorms. Everything's looking really good.
Yeah, they've been great additions. You don't think of a parking garage as necessarily beautiful, Floyd, but they've done a good job with the sandstone look that is historic here on campus, and the new residence halls are that way, too. They're really beautiful from the outside, and I understand inside as well.
You know, I think that's exactly what it is, that sandstone that they use. I mean, when you look at it, it kind of just meshes with the rest of the university, of course. But it in a way, it hides the idea that it's a parking garage.
That's right. It does.
You know, it just kind of looks like another one of the buildings that are down there. And I've always enjoyed that look to those buildings. Chad, where does that sandstone come from? That's local, right?
Floyd, historically, there was a quarry out north of Laramie here that the sandstone was used from. I'll just have to be honest with you. In recent years, that quarry has played out, and so I believe I'm told that most of the sandstone's coming from southern Utah.
Oh, wow.
So that's maybe that dirty little secret, but it's got to be honest with you. But it does match very well, and it continues a long-time tradition here at UW.
Well, I think that's kind of funny, but at the same time, I can totally see what's happening. I mean, a lot of buildings went up, so I could see why that sandstone ran out down there in Laramie. But, I mean, geez, just about every building has got that on there. Or is it every building?
Well, we went through this period kind of, I'd say, maybe in the 70s and 80s, where some of the buildings got away from that a bit. But in, you know, so in the last 20 years or so, we've I guess gone back to our roots, Floyd. And even, for example, the College of Law was one of those buildings built in the 70s that didn't use sandstone. They did this big addition, of course, and if you go there now, the sandstone's on there. So it's even, you know, some of those old buildings. You look at, like, the big engineering and agriculture buildings built in the early 80s. They didn't have the sandstone, but our new engineering building, those new buildings to the north, on the north part of campus, engineering, the Mackenzie STEM building, the new Science Initiative building, they all have the sandstone as well. So we're back to our roots.
I've seen some old photos down there when the university kind of first established itself, and it was a little mind-blowing to look through those photos because it seemed like one building way out there by itself was really the beginning of it all. And to look at it now, I think it's just absolutely amazing. You know, I know it's not exactly new anymore. I mean, it's been there for a little while, but the classroom building was always kind of one of my favorite. I guess you could call it upgrades because the classroom building was there beforehand, but the new one looks amazing.
Yeah. So the classroom building kind of this has the circular look to it. I'm no architect, so I'm not using the right terms, but that was built, I think, in the 60s, and it's still used very well. And so that's, you know, when you say the classroom building, that's there, and it's a fixture of campus. So we have upgraded it over the years in the interior, so it's modern classrooms and everything. But students spend a lot of time in there, and that particular one. We have the new business building. I think it's about 15 years old, and a lot of classes are held in there now. And then, of course, the new buildings, like the all the labs now are in the NZ building, pretty much undergraduate labs. And so, you know, students are they're having different experiences than you and I had, Floyd, when we were students.
Yep, that's true.
And newer, better facilities, but we still have the old classics too here. So it's kind of a good combination.
Now, when it comes to the new dorms, those at least some of those should be ready by this coming fall semester, correct?
Yeah. That the North Hall, which includes our new dining facility, that will be open for this coming semester in the fall, and then the South Hall will be open for the spring semester.
That's
so
fantastic.
Yeah, this is a, you know, multi-year project. It's taken a lot of work, but the North Hall is almost ready. I think they're delivering the furniture in the next couple weeks, and then it will be students moving in there on August 15th.
Wow. That's got to be one of the most exciting things, to be the first students at a new, facility like that. It's got to be just kind of really cool. Imagine being the first student to go through that line in the dining facility. Now, one thing also pretty big deal. Recently, it was announced UW's opened a professorship in public service in the School of Politics, Public Affairs, and International Studies. Chad, what is this, and how did it come about?
So, there's a real strong Sheridan County connection on a couple of levels here. That's really kind of cool. So, there's a couple a longtime couple in Sheridan, Clyde and Jareen Stewart, and their children. Their daughter is named Kendall Hartman. So the Stewarts have passed on, but their daughter and her husband have endowed a professorship, which means a big donation that will spin off continual funding for this professorship in public service. And in addition to the family being a Sheridan family, the professor who's going to be the first official Stewart family professor is Gene Garrison, who is a Tongue River High School graduate and grew up in Sheridan County. And so Dr. Garrison's been a professor here now for 25 years. She's built a long legacy of programs to advance public service opportunities for students. And she's now taking that endowed professorship that's in honor of Clyde and Jerrine Stewart.
You know, this is really interesting. When we say a professorship, what exactly is that? Is it? Do we now have kind of a designation for a professor to specifically teach things regarding public service?
That's correct. That's exactly what it means. This will create funding for Dr. Garrison, and supporting students and to learn and appreciate the value of public service. So there, it's long-term financial stability to attract and retain outstanding faculty is really what that means. You have that allocated funding that's basically in perpetuity to make sure that position is going to be funded and the supporting funding to be able to do the programming that's associated with it.
And this is really interesting. Does this open up kind of a whole new realm of study? Can we begin to develop like a curriculum which could possibly lead to certifications, degrees regarding public service that would lead to careers and maybe 501c3 management or things like that?
I think that potential is there, Floyd. I can tell you that Dr. Garrison, here's another Sheridan County connection, she runs the Malcolm Wallop Civic Engagement Program, which teaches public service. And, of course, Senator Wallop, a Sheridan County man and a longtime politician. And so, yes, we're very much part of the curriculum in that, and her programs is public service and being a good citizen and being a leader.
Mm-hmm.
There's no political bent to this at all. I mean, of course, Senator Wallop was a Republican, but this is not partisanship. This is teaching, people develop their own partisan beliefs throughout their lives, and there's no indoctrination going on here. But this is just teaching the fundamentals of what it means to be a good American and how you can engage and serve your communities.
I think that's really fascinating. I do know that there's programs regarding 501c3s and how to manage them, certifications that I think can be earned through a lot of hard work. But running a nonprofit nowadays, it is quite the job, quite the position. And the executive directors and the directors that I've met and spoke to over the years, these are highly intelligent, extremely competent individuals who are essentially serving the public, serving their communities through these fantastic programs, whether that be food group or other various nonprofits throughout the communities. If somebody who had the heart and the drive to serve the community could find an avenue of education, maybe even hit things like, master's degrees in social engagement, social work, I think would be absolutely amazing. So I think that is a fantastic professorship. Where do we go from where we're at right now? Does she have kind of a game plan in place?
I'm sure she does, Floyd. As a matter of fact, we probably ought to get her on your program here.
That'd
one
be
of these
great.
Next months. Dr. Garrison can talk all about all the plans she has and the things she's going to do with this professorship. She's very, very active and always has something in the works. So I'll see if I can get her lined up for you.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. I think that's an excellent avenue to take, because when we look at an individual, a citizen or a resident as a whole, you've got your education and community service should be right there with it. Now, as we look down through this month, it was actually also reported from the University of Wyoming that Farm Credit Services of America endowed a deanship at the university. This is a little bit different than a professorship, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, when you talk about being able to donate and support programs at the university, there's many, many options to do it. One of them is this idea of the establishing an endowment to support and we just talked about a professorship, the deanship takes it to a new level, and we actually have a level that we haven't yet had happen here at UW, where you could have a whole college named for you. But the dean, this endowed deanship, is in our College of Agriculture and Life Sciences and Natural Resources, and it's Farm Credit Services of America, which is the big ag lender, you know, that serves people in across Wyoming and many other states, of course. But the the dean of the College of Agriculture now is under this Farm Credit Services of America deanship endowment. And we don't have all the exact details here, but I can tell you that historically, to have a deanship named for you, it's in the neighborhood of $5 million gift.
And so that's
the kind of level of that we're talking about here. And it's really important. I mean, the College of Agriculture, foundational to our land grant mission, Floyd. I mean, that's what we're real all about. I mean, there's other aspects. Engineering is huge. Business, I mean, all the humanities, all we have it all at UW, but College of Ag is a foundational college at our university, and now with this endowed deanship, it really just elevates it even more.
It's really interesting, and you are right. The College of Agriculture down there at the university is an absolute cornerstone of the education that it provides, and so many people that I know, ended up getting degrees in land management and going on to work for all kinds of different departments or even running their own family farms. Now, these deanships offer a type of freedom to an educator. What is this freedom that these deanships offer?
So it allows you to, the dean then has the ability to invest in teaching, you know, making sure that instruction and the instructional programs we have are top-notch, research. So it's make sure we're doing research that's really relevant to our state and our industry here, and then community programs that elevate ag as a driver of innovation in Wyoming and really in the whole region. So it's we're talking about natural resources, food systems, environmental stewardship, rural resilience, all these things that that we'll be able to do better now because of this this deanship.
And the price tag on that, about $5 million. That is a heck of a contribution. All right, we're going to have more with our University of Wyoming right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Shared.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to Compass Center for Families.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit eFirstFederal.bank, member FDIC.
At Legacy Diamond and Gems, you'll discover a gemstone as rare as it is remarkable. Alexandrite, famous for its dramatic color change from emerald green in the daylight to ruby red in candlelight, Alexandrite is a stone of mystery, magic, and transformation. Sought after by collectors and romantics and anyone who is drawn to its mystery, Alexandrite is as dramatic as it is beautiful. Find your Alexandrite stone at Legacy Diamond and Gems, 11 North Main in downtown Sheridan.
This public service message is presented by BHJ Property Management at 101 South Main.
Are you looking for exciting ways to connect with nature and the outdoors? Sheridan Community Land Trust Discovery Sessions will help you learn new ways to explore and enjoy our beautiful Bighorn's backyard. New Discovery Sessions are always being added. See what you can discover under the Events tab at SheridanCLT.org.
Think you've got serious bass skills? Then prove it. Kinect Home Center and Century 21 BHJ Realty present Fish Your Bass Off on SheridanMedia.com. Snap and upload your best fishing photo for a shot at $600 in prizes. That's right. Fish all summer and show us your catches. Enter now on the contest page at SheridanMedia.com. So grab your gear, hit the water, and fish your bass off.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. This morning, I'm speaking with University of Wyoming Director of Institutional Communications, Mr. Chad Baldwin. Now, recently UW researchers have found some strong evidence that sharp-tailed grouse located in south central Wyoming could actually potentially be a distinct subspecies. This is actually extremely interesting. Chad, where are these distinct grouse actually located on a map, if I were to look at it?
So it's basically southern Carbon County, Floyd. It's down in the Little Snake River area. So that's southern Carbon County. If you've never been there, everybody ought to go. It's beautiful. There's Savory is a community there. There's Bags. And then this bird, there's about 8,000 to 10,000 of them there. And then in parts of then northern Colorado as well. So that's where the area we're talking about.
Wow, and there's not that many of them, is there?
Well, I mean, you know, you hear 8,000 to 10,000, it's quite a bit. But it's, you know, when you, in the whole scheme of things, for example, I mean, in Wyoming we have, as I understand it, about four subspecies of grouse. We've got our iconic sage grouse, of course, that's out there in the sagebrush. We got blue grouse, or pine grouse, they call them, that are up kind of high. We have ruffed grouse, which are more sort of foothills and maybe more willowy type of areas. And then we have these sharp-tailed grouse, which are grassland birds. And so in the Powder River Basin, you've got what they call plain sharp-tailed grouse. And so they're the ones that are out there in the grasslands and across up into Canada and that area. And then this other species is called Columbian sharp-tailed grouse, and the only place in Wyoming where they have been is in this part that they call them this part of south central Wyoming. Then all like over in the Jackson area, and then in Idaho, and that's why they call it Columbian, because they're up there the Columbia Basin.
Okay.
So you got them in Washington, Oregon, Nevada. That's where the Columbian sharptails are, but they're all on the west side of the Continental Divide. And of course, Savory, I was just talking about here, the Little Snake River is west of the Continental Divide as well. And so they thought they were all just Columbian sharptails because they're west of the divide. But there's this research by Dr. Jeff Beck, who's coincidentally in the College of Ag, Life Sciences and Natural Resources here, and his PhD student, wanted to take a look at, are these birds really Columbian sharptails? Because there's been some people say, well, they're actually plain sharptails. Well, they found out they're neither. This particular thing is unique. It's not Columbian sharptail, and it's not plain sharptail. It's its own thing. And you know, they did this with DNA. They did it by really intense study of the way they're built, the structure, what their appearance is. They call it the morphology, and then looking at really closely at the type of habitat they're in. And so it's really interesting. And you know, I mean, these birds down there, you haven't been able to, Game and Fish doesn't let you hunt these particular grouse down there already. I mean, that's always been the case. But it's just kind of cool to see, you know, this. It's isolated. It's isolated from the plains sharptails, and it's isolated from the Columbian sharptails. And it's a unique type of grouse.
I think that is so fascinating because now, you know, one thing that I'm always telling folks is the beautiful part about science is the more that we discover, the more questions that come up. And by, you know, making this discovery, finding this fantastic evidence that this thing could be completely kind of an offshoot over there on its own, it makes you wonder what happened. It makes you wonder who came first, you know, if they kind of went off on their own and adapted to their environment and thus ended up kind of evolving into a whole nother subspecies, or if a group went off and succeeded more in the north, who came first? Where it all began?
Yeah, you know, Dr. Beck, who's actually a friend of mine, he did tell me the other day that he thinks it's possible that they were related to the subspecies of grouse that used to be in New Mexico.
Oh wow!
But they're extinct now. There aren't any of these grouse in New Mexico anymore. So this could be sort of the most northern and surviving group from that same subspecies. That's a little bit speculation on his part. He's looking at historical records of what they looked like and you know where they lived and that kind of thing. So anyway, yeah, they're a unique group of birds there and a really beautiful part of the state and the west here, and we do share them into Colorado. But it's just the north part, just the very north part of Colorado.
It's such a fascinating discovery. You know, you think you know a lot about something, and then there's always something more to learn. And speaking of something more to learn, the University of Wyoming is going to host a free educational field day Tuesday, July 1st. This is going to happen out at the Sheridan Research and Extension Center. Chad, what will this field day consist of this year?
So you're going to be taking a look at invasive grasses, wildfire recovery, which this is really important stuff in your neck of the woods, pest control, precision ag technologies, and forage crops. So this is a day-long deal. It starts at 8 o'clock. The lunch will be served, and the field tour will look at pivot systems, irrigation, alfalfa weevil management, bird control, orchard grass, and as I mentioned, invasive grasses and wildfire recovery. So, and then looking at crops like spring barley and winter hay barley, soybeans, and winter peas. So our Sheridan Research Extension Center is one of the pillars of our Ag Experimental Station, which is an important part of the university's land-grant mission. And I know that Brian Mueller and his colleagues up there will be delighted to have the community come and see what they've got going there.
Absolutely. A lot of fantastic information being shared out there. You know, there's the reason that they actually go out there and spend all day doing all this research, folks, and it's to benefit us right here. This field day is going to give you a peek at everything that they've been doing out there and also inform you on a lot of great information that I've been trying to really talk to people about, get to know a little bit more for myself, and that is this burn scar recovery. We do not want these invasive grasses around here, and I know that the University of Wyoming Sheridan Research and Extension Center has been studying these things for 20 years. So it's fantastic that they're going to share this information. Head on out there Tuesday, July 1st. Enjoy a day. Learn a lot of great information. Chad, one more thing about that, though. Are people allowed to just go out there, visit the Research and Extension Center, and learn what happens out there, or is it somewhat of a closed lab-type facility?
Boy, Dr. Mueller, Brian, who, by the way, is the invasive weed guru of Wyoming, acknowledge he has more knowledge than anybody in Wyoming about that topic. He's open to people coming out anytime. Now, it's always good to give him a call. And the number is 673-2856. And just let him know. But he's always willing to engage with people. And if you have questions or want to see what's going on, this field day is great because it's set up for groups, you know, so they can do it. But Brian's always willing to engage with people at any level. And so just give him a call or drop by. Either way, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fantastic. He's a super nice guy, folks. He's been studying this stuff the majority of his life. Head on out there if you've got some invasive grasses on your property. Learn what you can do to help prevent the spread of this stuff. Going to have a major impact on the state of Wyoming if it gets out of control. Chad, I want to thank you so much for calling in and speaking with us this morning. It's always a pleasure, my friend.
Hey, thank you, Floyd.
All right. When we come back, we're going to speak with Sheridan County Library System. You're listening to Public Pulse, 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
The Board of Directors of First Federal Bank and Trust is proud to announce DJ Dearcorn as our new president and CEO-elect. DJ will take over from current CEO Kevin Bailey, who will be retiring in January.
DJ has built a reputation of strong leadership, integrity, and commitment throughout his many years with First Federal.
As DJ, our management team, and staff lead us forward, we're excited for the future and grateful for the trust of the communities we serve.
First Federal Bank and Trust, community commitment, lifetime legacy. Member FDIC.
Not sure who to trust with a redo of the roof and siding on your home? Call the pros. This is Nate with Pro Plus, and we've been Northeastern Wyoming's premier roofing, siding, and storm damage restoration contractor for over 20 years. We are fully licensed, bonded, insured, and have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Don't trust your most valuable investment with just any contractor. Call the pros. We'll handle all the repairs and walk you through the insurance process. Give us a call today, 675-0889, for a free no obligation inspection and estimate.
Saddle Ridge Rehabilitation Center at Westview is your only Medicare five-star rated and state deficiency free rehabilitation facility in Sheridan County. It's where quality matters every day. We're here for all of your inpatient and outpatient rehab needs. We treat you like family in a beautiful country setting. Call us at 307-673-3734 for more information and to schedule a tour.
It's time again for Burgers on the Grill this Friday at Farmers Co-op. Brat burgers, that is, along with jalapeno brats and Philly cheesesteak brats. They'll be cooking them up in front of the store this Friday from 11 to 1. Stop by for a brat burger or a brat and a 20-ounce soda for just $6.50. They must have been in the sun a little too long. A brat burger and a 20-ounce drink for just $6.50 this Friday from 11 to 1 at Farmers Co-op, 1450 Coffeen Avenue in Sheridan.
Doug, I hear something sizzling at Waring Chevrolet, and it's not just the barbecue.
You got it, Bob. Our free customer appreciation barbecue is Friday, June 27th from 11:30 to 1:30, and we're serving up big savings during our inventory reduction sale going on right now.
New or pre-owned, there are deals up to $10,000 off, and you'll meet or beat any deal in writing?
Absolutely. Great food, great folks, and even better deals.
Don't miss it. Waring Chevrolet, 107 East Alger, online, waringsheridan.com.
I'm Aaron Lagaki, owner of Moss Holders Design Center. And if you've listened to Sheridan Media Stations anytime since the 1980s, you've probably heard our name. That's four decades of staying connected to our customers because radio works. It builds trust and keeps us in people's homes, cars, and their conversations. If you're running a local business and not using Sheridan Media, you're not just missing opportunities, you're handing them to someone else. Trust me, radio is worth it.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. For our second part this morning, I am joined by Sheridan County Library System Community Engagement Manager Cassie Stone and Youth Services Manager Zola Shockley. Good morning, ladies. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Now, summer is here. It's finally arrived. The big plans going into effect. The library recently hosted Joey Leone. You were telling me a little bit about this, Cassie, before the during the break. Hang on. Go ahead.
Yeah, we did. We hosted him again last night. Last year was his first time at the library, and he had a program called The History of the Blues. And last night we brought him back, and it was the British Invasion, which is the history of all of the UK bands and kind of their popularity in the States. Joey is a musician and an educator and a historian, a music historian, and he does a really amazing job storytelling and playing the music as he's telling the stories of how all of these people knew each other and where they were getting influenced from, and kind of just making a really good educational music show. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Like weaving it all together. Yep. So it seems flawless.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody can do something like that, boy, they grab my attention and I'm hooked. Yep. And you know, they've got this certain charisma that various educators have that just capture you. And to be able to sing on top of all of that and play an instrument while educating individuals, holy cow. Yep. Now, for those who may not know, he will be back.
Yeah, we'll have you him have... back. We'll have him back next year. He is mesmerizing as a storyteller. And I'm not sure what program that he'll be doing and what kind of music history we're going to learn next year, but he will definitely be back next year.
And I think that's great. Music history. How often do you actually get like a music history program outside of an educational facility? You know what I mean?
No, you don't. You don't really.
You really like, don't.
Yeah. And it's not that you have to. Music is, you don't have to have knowledge to enjoy it, but so much of the music that we all enjoy, we don't know a lot of the history around it.
And every tree has a root, you know, and learning exactly where things come from kind of blows my mind. I took a classic music history class in college, and it didn't just expand my history knowledge. It expanded my appreciation and love of all music, because from that, you can look at that tree. And you can follow that limb all the way back down to that root. And having that kind of knowledge behind it explains how these little buds come out and branch out. And it makes you really appreciate it some more. And see the genius of some individuals who made that choice. I'm not doing it this way. I'm going my own route. And so, you get a chance to go see him, folks. Joey Leone, he will be back. To the Falmer is where he does this, in the Inner Circle. Now, let's talk about the summer reading program. You guys recently held the kickoff. How did it go?
It went very, very well. We had more attendees than expected. I'd say anywhere between 200 and 300 people came to it.
That's fantastic.
Our messy arte was so much fun, so messy. We were just running around the whole time. Turns out kids like water balloons and squirt guns. Who'd have thunk?
The strangest thing.
We couldn't keep the water balloons coming. So, and we just had a really great time, and a lot of really cool artwork came from it. Some of these techniques were things that I hadn't even tested before we did it. I was like, it'll work or it won't. And they turned out some of those were my favorites. So
see, that's fantastic. You just let the kids use their imagination, sit back, give them the tools, and watch the magic.
Yeah. There were a lot of very messy kids. We're very lucky that the splash park is so close to the library. I think a lot of parents just rinsed their kids off in the splash park and then went home. So it was all tempera paint, so it's all non-toxic, and it's okay that it was added to the water supply. Got to put that out there.
Just a little disclaimer in there.
It's fine.
Now, can you remind us what the summer reading program is for maybe somebody's just joining us, they haven't heard our conversations in the past, and they've got some kids at home?
Yeah, it's super simple. You just need to come in and pick up a reading log. There's no sign up necessary. And if you're listening to this and you can't come to the library anytime soon, you can just start keeping track of your reading time at home on a piece of paper. So basically, every day that you read 20 minutes or more, you get to take off a day. For our reading logs, you get to color in a picture. And then when you get 5 pictures, you get to come in and get your prize. And we have 7 weeks of that. So,
all right. Now, do you kind of set books aside for this? Or can kids just pick what they want to read?
Oh, they can pick whatever they want to read. The really beautiful thing about this is that it is their chance to just have fun reading. School is great, but it's very structured. It's trying to keep them on a certain track, which they need to do. But over the summer, what we're trying to instill is just a love of reading in kids. So it can be one of our books. It can be a book from home. It can be a book that their friend lent them. Magazines count. Really, any reading material counts. We just want kids to realize that reading can be enjoyable and it doesn't have to be a challenge.
Yeah. And I think that's fantastic. Reading without a curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that is really popularized anymore in media like it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a shame. But a lot of people, very busy. So I'm not going to, attack anybody for that, because you throw those earbuds in.
Yeah.
Turn on a book on tape and clean while you're getting all that done.
Yep.
And that should count.
And that's why we don't have it be competitive with the amount of time read. We just want everybody to understand, if you do 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, like, that is keeping on track of it, you know, because that prevents the summer slide, which is the big concern. We're not looking at growing kids' reading skills over the summer necessarily, because it's the summer. They're running around, they're having fun, but we just want to prevent the loss of those literacy skills that happen when kids don't read for a little while. So it's an easy way, an achievable way. And also it's nice because parents don't really have to stay on top of it. I mean, the kids should be able to figure out how long they read for, and it shouldn't be a chore for parents who already have a lot going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Plus, if you need, or if the kid wouldn't mind, it's good reason to dig out the old egg timer.
Yeah.
Turn that on. That's what I used to use when I was a kid. Now, does it appear like a lot of kids are participating this year? There isn't really a sign up per se.
There isn't a sign up, but we're keeping track of the summer reading logs that we've handed out. So I think, and this is all approximate at this point because I'm printing them off yesterday, we've handed out probably about 500 reading logs so far.
And the friends hosted a booth for us at Third Thursday. And so we got to hand out logs and do button making and sensory bins at
Third
Thursday.
And I'm not counting those because I'm like, I don't know if the Third Thursday ones will come back. We'll see. But if they were handed out at the library.
Yeah. Which I think is absolutely fantastic. You guys had a banner year last year. And I would love to see that grow even more.
I think it is. I mean, programs are very, very well attended at this point, to the point that I'm like, do we need to do second sessions of some of this? Because I think my first story time we had like 73 people at it, which is a lot in a tiny room.
We've
kind of gone down a little bit, so it's a little bit more manageable, but they're still all very, very well attended. So I think people are looking for free stuff to do.
Well, and it kind of brings up the question. I'm getting off on a tangent here.
Going
off in the toolies as I tend to when you guys are on the show. But it makes me wonder if more and more residents, citizens are taking advantage of their library systems throughout the country. I haven't done any research on this, but I would absolutely love to kind of see what the trend is nationwide. Is there a trend? Is it generationally, oriented? People coming back to the library, maybe for a sense of community, for a sense of belonging, for a sense of it's just a good, peaceful, air-conditioned place where I can go, read in a corner by myself. I know a lot of people like to do that, myself included. Or just go and hang out, enjoy the programs. I would love to see what these trends are, because it looks, or at least appears on the surface to me, like people are really taking advantage of the Sheridan County Library System.
Yeah. Well, I think, I don't have the most recent numbers, but I do know that folks in Wyoming use their libraries at the highest rate in the country.
Oh, wow.
Per capita.
Yeah.
Like, people here love reading and they love libraries and they support them. And it makes me really proud to be in Wyoming.
Absolutely.
And to live here.
Absolutely. Yeah. To be able to kind of pin that medal on your chest.
Yes.
I'd love it.
And I think that there are a couple of factors. Things have gotten more expensive lately. So I think it's very rare to find something that is completely free. And that's all library programs are completely free. And we don't require registration for our kids' programs, so it's not super hard. If you don't make it, you don't have that guilt of like, I signed up for that class. And we have a lot of really amazing nonprofits who host really great kids programs, but they do have to charge something just because of the nature of it. And even if it's $5 a class, which is really reasonable, we have a lot of big families here. So if you have six kids and it's $5 a class for your six kids, that does get expensive quickly. I also think we have seen an influx of new people. And I think that that is something that a lot of people, that's the first thing they do when they move to a new place, is they go and visit the library. And we have a really great library, so a lot of people are very enthusiastic about that. And they're going to spend time there. I've heard so many people who are coming from other places and they're like, this library is amazing. I moved from a much bigger place that didn't have as nice of a library. So we're very lucky in that. So I think an influx of new people and also a free space that you can just exist is really amazing nowadays.
And there's so many places in town that do really great programming. The college has great community classes. Sage has great community classes. And when we think about programming at the library, and especially because this theme is the summer's theme is art programming, we think of ourselves as a great place for parents to let their kids try out something before they go on to take professional classes.
Yeah.
Because the skill level that we're teaching at is introductory. And but there's so many great professional courses available in Sheridan.
Yeah. It's a little tasting menu of what you might like.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting seeing teens doing our programs, because some of it they're like, this is amazing, I love this, I would do this every day, and then maybe the next week's program they're not that into. So I'm able to say, hey, you know, Sage has classes about this, maybe you want to go and look into that, because
and go farther into the community.
Yeah, because for me, I just learned a lot of different skills, but it's enough to teach an introductory class. So, you know, I'm not able to go further because I'm not an actual art instructor. I'm a librarian. But it is one of those things that we're lucky to have the community that we have to be able to give other people resources. And that's yet another thing that the library is there for, to direct you to the resources that you need.
The shallow end of the pool, just kind of dip my toe in and see if that's the art that I want to engage in. But while we're there, let's go ahead and pick up a couple books and take them home and read.
We do books too.
Now, I'm glad you brought up teens taking part in the programming, because usually I would think that's kind of when you start to see them fall off. When it's around that age, you know, they become more involved with friends and more of the social aspect of growing up. So I was wondering, what kind of teen programs do you guys have?
So that's Wednesdays, today, at 4 o'clock, I have my teen program. And our first one, which was last week, wasn't super well attended, but it was enthusiastically attended. We did pendulum painting, which was really great. You just fill a bucket and cut a hole in the bottom and swing it around. It was so much fun. We had a really messy time. And that's, I mean, these are the teens who are like, why don't you do this every day? I would come to this if you did this multiple times a day. Like, because I would die, children. But
it's gonna be such a mess.
But so there is that enthusiasm there, and it's fun to watch as the summer reading program goes on how these teens are talking to their friends, and it becomes a social thing for them. I think a lot of people are intimidated by the library initially, so having somebody go to it and be like, see, it's fun. It's not scary. We made a giant mess out of pendulum painting. It's okay. So that's what we're working on, is just letting people know that it doesn't have to be serious.
And we also have a reading program for teens and adults. So it's book bingo. It is for people who are age 12 and up, and there are, you get one book bingo card a week, and if you fill out your bingo and complete every one of the bingo squares and get a bingo, you get entered for a raffle to win a prize basket. So there's two baskets that are for YA readers, age 12 through 17, and then there's two prize baskets for 18 and over.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It really keeps them engaged and gives them a goal while they're reading. Not only are you enjoying yourself, but you're also kind of working towards something. I'm running out of time with you ladies, but I got one more question real quick. Cassie, when it comes to the art on the mezzanine.
Oh, yeah.
Real quick, how's it going?
It's going very, very well. This is art made from ages 0 through 12, and it is also features messy art. It's going to be great. We're having an art reception tomorrow Thursday, from 4 to 6, and we're going to have adult charcuterie, and then we're also going to have kid charcuterie on little kid tables. All the art is hung at kid height. Like, this is a art exhibition by kids for kids.
That's fantastic. And I got to come see it. You know, just even hanging it down there for the kids is...
It's so cute.
It just, I was going to say, you know, it just makes my heart swell thinking about all the kids being up there and kind of showing off their work, you know?
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Do we have time?
I've got about probably 45 seconds.
I was at the Lewistown Art Center and I purchased a piece of art from someone who was around 12, and the amount of personal satisfaction in seeing the joy at somebody realizing that, like, something they made is desirable.
Yeah.
It was glorious.
Yes. I'm a selling artist at 12.
I mean, 12.
It's such a fantastic. Ladies, I always have such a great time every time you guys come in and talking about these fantastic programs. Once again, I think what you do is so important to the community, so important to child development, so important for community engagement. So I thank you, and I thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Share it in.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to Compass Center for Families.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Yvonne with the Advocacy and Resource Center. Bikers Against Bruises is back, riding twice over the Bighorn Mountains. Early registration Friday, June 27th, 5 to 8 at the No Name Bar. Saturday, June 28th, meet at the Java Moon Station in Sheridan from 8 to 9 for coffee, treats, and the ride of your life. $20 per game. We will end the ride with food from Beano's and live music at the Last Chance Bar in Bighorn. All proceeds help victims of violent crimes in Sheridan County. Questions? Call 672-7471.
Up where the air is thin and the pines whisper secrets, there's a place called Spiro Wigwam, 30 miles up the Red Grade, at 8,300 feet in the heart of the Bighorns, where the trail calls to those with a cowboy soul. Saddle up for half-day or all-day guided horseback rides, perfect for families, first-timers, even the seasoned cowhand. So experience the way the West was meant to be, horseback. Call Spiro Wigwam or go online at SpiroWigwam.com to come ride where the trails touch the sky.
Celebrate the 4th of July with family, friends, and your country neighbors with fireworks. Whiz Bang Fireworks is now open with a huge selection of fireworks. High 500 milligram display cakes, multi-shot reloading artillery shells from bottle rockets, Roman candles, missiles, fountains, cones, bigger and better assortment packs. Whiz Bang Fireworks will get your 4th of July off to a big bang. Whiz Bang Fireworks is now open daily. 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. on North Main Street behind Pizza Hut. Please follow all local laws.
Hi, this is Leslie Segretti.
And I'm Tom Kreitler, and you're listening to News Talk 930 KROE.